Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 16 of the Playoff Push Podcast. I'm your host, Jack Dobbins, and today we are joined by a very special guest, an alumni of my high school, Holy Ghost Prep, alumni of University of Cincinnati Baseball, the founder of KW Baseball, along with the co-founder of PBX Pickleball, Mr. Kevin Wilson. How are we today?
We're doing great, Jack. Thanks for having me.
Always, of course. You know, I've, you know, been talking with you for years and years and years. You and Braden are so close to my family, and it's just amazing to be able to finally get you on the podcast.
Yeah, it's really exciting when you wrap it like that. It's really special to be able to do something like this, sit knee to knee and talk on a podcast. But this has been many years in the making, as you just alluded to.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm so happy I was able to, you know, get this podcast going. I've been having dreams about it for years, and it's just nice getting all these people who I've, you know, either been interacting with for years like yourself, or maybe wanted to. Like, I had Curtis Granderson on a few episodes ago. I'm assuming you saw that. But
Absolutely.
so great. And it's just amazing to have you on for the first time.
Yeah, you've had some really special guests. Curtis is a special person. You know, your last guest, Dan, another special person. And, you know, you remind me of my best friend, Joe Ferrero, that went to Holy Ghost as well, has his own podcast. And you're doing a lot of the things similar to what he did and what he's doing. And I even thought back to what Dan talked about with your persistence in emailing and getting him on the show. That's how Joe has gotten some of the most amazing people on his show. So what you're doing, putting yourself out there as a senior in high school, there's a lot to be said about that. So I'm proud of you.
That's always the goal. I love my connections. One thing, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of his rain checks. I've gotten quite a few of them, but hopefully, you know, those come back around eventually. May or may not have gotten a couple rain checks from a few NFL Hall of Famers for potentially next year. But we'll get there when we get there.
Absolutely.
So let's start off, you know, again, topic on everyone's mind. We are in the middle of October. What have been your thoughts on the playoffs so far?
I think they've been great. First and foremost, I think they've been engaging. I think the teams in the playoffs, not that there's always a team in the playoffs that's not worthy of being there, but you kind of have the usual suspects, and there has been a lot of drama so far. There's been, you know, there hasn't been a team that's got punched that is laid down, right? So there's been punches thrown in both directions. You know, we'll take the Dodgers series and the Mets, for example. You know, you go beat up in the first game and you come back and you win the second game. I think there's been a lot of drama in a good way. And I think the last couple of years have been like that, but especially this year, I love to see that. I think that's what the playoffs are all about as a player. You're worn down at the end of the year, but if you get to get into the playoffs, there's that second wind, right? There is that.
Oh, totally.
You know, because not everybody gets to do that. There are guys that play their entire careers and never sniff the playoffs. You know, they could play 15 years.
Trout's only played one series.
Yeah. So to be there is special and certainly gets your engine revved, and, you know, you're able to get in there and, you know, find that extra gear. So everything's heightened. Every pitch is heightened. Every little thing is scrutinized. And it's a different brand of baseball when you get in the playoffs. There is bunting. Oh my goodness. There's bunting, right?
Oh,
there's,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hit and runs. There's steals. There's just everything. It's really, truly the best brand of baseball.
Oh, I totally agree. And my favorite thing about the playoffs so far has been that my playoff bracket for the championship series is 100% wrong. Like, I did not pick a single team correct. My AL matchup was Baltimore and Houston, and my NL matchup was Philadelphia and San Diego. So that's entirely wrong, but I think that's great. You know, I love the fact that I use, you know, my ideas and then get proven wrong by some incredible runs. Like, I've loved this. I love the Detroit run while it was still alive. You know, Kerry Carpenter kind of holding that team down before Lane Thomas decided to take it into his own hands and crush Tarik Skubal. But it's just great to see all these teams that maybe I wouldn't expect to go as far as they did go that far.
Yeah, I mean, even mention the wild card teams, the Phillies, the last couple of years in 22 in specifics, that they ran the gamut, right, all the way to the end. They didn't win the World Series, but they got there. You know, no one was really expecting them to kind of do much. They hadn't been in the playoffs in a long time. And, it really is a lot about the team that's hot going in. It's not about the best team. It's about the team that is playing the best brand of baseball at that time during the playoffs, going into the playoffs and certainly through it. And, AJ Hinch, I give him a lot of credit. I mean, that team trades away Jack Flaherty, and Scooble steps up, and he has stepped up all year, but and they still get into the playoffs and they still make a run
It's
at it.
incredible.
It was really, really special.
And all of that, I believe, I'm not sure if my numbers are going to be correct, but I think the top six money makers on that payroll were not, were either benched or not on the team. I think it was like Baez, Cabrera, I think Andrew Chafin was on there. I saw Kenta Maeda. I saw the stats. I was like, wow, how on earth did they make the playoffs when their top six paid players are not playing?
And that's really cool because a lot of new players got a chance to step up, right? And to kind of cut their teeth and show what they can do when the stakes are the highest. And I think that's, in that particular case, I think that was really cool for the young
Yeah.
kids to be able to step in.
Kerry Carpenter, Parker Meadows, and I can keep going and going and going. That Detroit team's young. Same with the KC team coming into this playoffs. Unfortunately, they went, well, actually, fortunately for me, but probably unfortunately for baseball, they went cold against us. But that was a team where last year I went to, I think it was Philly, I think it was Royals Phillies, and I think it was Brad Keller was pitching, and I was like, wow, this Royals team sucks. It'll be a while before they get back to the playoffs. And here they are, right here for a while this following year.
Philly native JJ Piccolo is the GM there, and I think they got to the quote rebuild. They got to it a little bit quicker
Oh yeah,
than
100%.
people anticipated. You have Bobby Witt Jr., who is a special player in his own regard, but you have that plus you sprinkle in a little bit of Salvi Perez, who he seems
Huge
like he's
veteran
been
presence.
around.
Incredible veteran presence.
Yeah, and he's been around forever, and he was there when they won it. All those years ago, almost 10 years ago now. So you have a little bit of that young star, superstar in Bobby Witt Jr. You have a little bit of that old presence, like you said, in Salvi. Then you have some other pieces. I think JJ made some really good moves there too, bringing in some of the pitching, veteran pitching that they did have.
Oh yeah,
And
Lugo is huge.
and Cole Reagans mixed in there, and you had a really good staff mixed in with some good position players, obviously led by Bobby Witt Jr. And again, they made a run. Now, one could argue, it's AL Central. AL Central, you just mentioned another team in the AL
Three
Central,
postseason
right?
teams,
You've
Cleveland, Kansas
mentioned
City, Detroit.
exactly. So they did all that in an incredibly tough division. So all in all, Kansas City, they got to, I think they skipped a few steps in their rebuild, and they're there sooner than most people thought.
Yeah, and I hope, you guys will forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think Minnesota was either the first or second team out of the playoffs as well. So they were up there too. They may or may not have all buffed their records by beating the living crap out of the Chicago White Sox, having the worst season in baseball
Well,
history.
that's the other thing. I was talking to Ruben Amaro the other day on the golf course about that because they were in that same division. How bad? My question was, how bad really were the White Sox, right? Yes, they didn't have a good season. But if you put them in another division that's not as competitive as the AL Central, do they lose that many games, right? We'll never know. But I thought, we were just discussing just how tough their road was, too.
Oh yeah, what could have been for those White Sox if they hadn't had, the worst season in baseball history?
Yeah, it was tough for everybody involved for sure.
Especially with so much talent. Like I thought, like I'm in love with Luis Robert as a player. I think he's super talented. It's just he hasn't been able to show it on the ball field too much. I think the same thing about Jarred Kelenic. I thought he was incredibly talented coming up through the minors, just wasn't able to make it work. Robert's done slightly more, but still hasn't been able to pan out to his full potential yet.
Yeah, I mean, Jared, he's young too. You got to think about it.
Oh, yeah.
I still am a believer in him. Again, just so much upside to him, and also his age. Being able to be something to be said about being in the right place too. Sometimes you'll see guys that don't pan out in other teams, and they get traded or they get picked up free agent wise, and they flourish. There's so many variables to it, but I do like Jared I do like his skill set. And again, just playing a long game with him, he's just still so young and has a lot
Yeah.
more in the tank.
We all love MLB here. So currently a 1-1 set between the Dodgers and the Mets. Yankees are up 1-0 in the ALCS. That second game will be on by the time that this episode finishes being recorded. But how about we start getting over to you? This is an interview after all right? So, starting off, Holy Ghost Prep, my high school. You played some ball here, and then you went to the University of Cincinnati. So my first question is, what was the transition from high school to college ball like, especially with the D1 program?
Great question. It was a struggle. It was a struggle. It was tough. I didn't know what to expect. My parents never played collegiate sports whatsoever. My mom dropped out of college after a semester. My dad went all the way through college, but he wasn't a didn't play any sports. And the landscape was different back then. We're talking mid-90s right now, and so at a Holy Ghost Prep, there weren't a lot of guys that went on and played Division I baseball from that program. The program has really grown and it's a lot different now, which is great. I love it. But I really didn't have anybody to really lean on. There's a couple guys that had played before. One guy played at Clemson who I really leaned on because I was getting recruited by Clemson at the time. And Tim Corbin, who's at Vanderbilt now, he was recruiting
Oh,
coordinator at
wow.
Clemson. So I've known Corbs for 30 years now. And so it was a lot different, but my transition was really difficult because I didn't know what to expect. I was Philadelphia Player of the Year out of high school, big whoop. Like it's easy to be good in Philadelphia, no disrespect to anybody else, but this is the truth. Then you go into a greater stage and a grander stage like I did at a really good Division I program. In a really competitive conference, Conference USA. It was the
Oh,
very beginning of
100%.
very beginning of Conference USA. And I struggled. I remember in fall ball, for example, my coach, who was 28 years old at the time, first year head coach, so he was
Wow.
about 10 years older than I was, still a dear friend to this day.
Sean McVay type stuff.
He had come from Tulane, so this was
Oh, sweet.
his first head coaching gig. And I struggled mightily in the fall. I wasn't hitting. He tried to change my stance. The game was really fast. These 22-year-olds looked like they were 30. Like there was just there were there was there was so much stronger and faster, and the game was so much quicker. And I remember he sat me down and he goes, "Hey man, I don't know if this place is for you." And he's the one that recruited me. And I said,
Wow.
I was like, I don't know. This is really tough. And he goes, "You know what? You might be better transferring to Temple, like going back home, right? And just pick the school." Temple
Whoa.
had recruited me heavily too, but I wanted to get out of town.
Yeah.
And so he knew that. So fast forward a couple of weeks later, I always mention his name and I always share the story because I am indebted to him forever. His name is Kerry Daniel. He was a graduate assistant on the team. And he had played at UC, just got done. He was a grad assistant. So CD pulled me aside one day outside the clubhouse and he goes, because he knew I was struggling. He goes, "Hey, man, I know there's not a lot of guys here that believe in you and you probably don't believe in yourself, but I believe in you. And
Wow.
you should not leave. And don't you dare go home because you're going to end up being one of the better players here by the time this is all said and done."
And that's the best thing to hear when you're down.
And if it wasn't for him, I was about to pack it up and go home. So I share one story of many stories I could share because to answer your question, it was tough. It was more adversity, anxiety, stress than I've ever came up against at that time. But at the end of the day, it was the best thing for me because I needed to go through that. High school was pretty easy. The competition wasn't that tough. And that right there really opened up the rest of the way for me. Not only my career in business and everything up to this day was that freshman year, that freshman fall of my collegiate year.
That's crazy. So it was all one guy that kept you going at UCincy, and that was that.
So yeah, CD was instrumental there. And then, we as a group, we came in, and I certainly wasn't the most famous Kevin there by any means. Kevin Youkilis was another freshman
Oh,
there with
yeah.
me. So we came in together, and our freshman class was pretty talented. And we called ourselves kind of the bunch of misfits because we came from all over the country, and it was kind of the people that no one else wanted. And so we had a little chip on our shoulder, and we had to figure things out, and we ended up kind of rewriting the record book by the end of it. And Kev obviously went on and did what he did, and we had a lot of other guys get a chance to play professional baseball out of that class. The stadium there is because of the stuff that we did. We didn't get a chance to play in it, but our AD says, "Hey, if you guys win, I'll go build you a stadium."
Whoa.
And that was the deal. So the stadium the kids play in now is because of what we did when we first got on campus in those 3 or 4 years. So we're proud of that. Played again in a very tough conference and against a lot of good players. It was the time of my life, but the beginning was not a little shaky, it was a lot shaky.
As I said, before the recording started, I may or may not have done a ton of research. And I also may or may not have looked at all of your college and independent league stats. So that's pretty cool. But one thing I did notice was the really notable increasing trend from freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year at Cincy. Senior year, you had an 880 OPS with a 374 batting average on balls in play, which the improvement was there. I believe your OPS was around 630 freshman year, if I were to guess. But that shows a lot of improvement. What was it that changed your stats so much during your collegiate career? Was it mentality? Was it swing? Was it like athletic training? What did it come down to you?
Well, kudos to you. I didn't even realize those things were out there. That was so far back then. I don't
It
know if you
was a
could find them.
bit of research, but I made it work.
That's impressive. Thinking back to college, getting to play freshman year and getting your ass kicked did a lot. I think I hit 135 my freshman year or 140, and I joke with people I got it up to that point by the end of the year. I had never ever failed as much as I failed that freshman year. And that really taught me a few things, not swing mechanic wise, not anything else, but it was perseverance and grit and really learning how to fail for the first time. Sophomore year, the league a little bit more. You've been through fall ball, you've been through winter training, you've been through campus, you've been through it all. So second time around, and anything you do, second podcast, second year of playing collegiate baseball, like you just feel more comfortable doing it. So second year, I just felt better about really everything. I had gotten a little bit stronger. Weightlifting became a big part of it. Weightlifting was not involved in high school. Like that was not really a thing back
Now
then.
we have a gorgeous weight room. Like it's
Now you
so
have a,
intense.
we had a weight room, but Mr. Chapman's team was the one, the basketball team was the only one that used it
Oh,
really
wow.
back then. But my point is that I got stronger. I learned the league a little bit more. I just gained more confidence and more experience. I started playing more second base than shortstop. That was different. I think that that helped me in certain ways. It was a lot easier to play second than short at that next level. I just had more range and I had the arm for short, but I could make more plays and do things. So that was fun. Like I had more fun doing that. By the end of it, I mean, every year I had different goals, and I can't remember all the goals now, but I do remember my last year. I was just trying to hit homers. And so I usually hung around strikeouts or about 10 more than walks. I tried to usually be around that. But that last year, I just tried to, see how many homers I could hit, and I didn't care about the strikeouts at that point. So for me, the maturation process was I learned how to play the game a little bit more. Being a switch hitter was tough because I hardly had any right-handed at bats in high school. And it seemed like I had every other at bat was right-handed freshman year because there were so many more lefties at the next level than in high school. I think I faced two lefties in 4 years of high school. So like it was a different that. So I got used to batting right-handed more in games. So that helped. So yeah, it was just a maturation on really everything as we went through it. Just learning myself too. But man, we had a really, really good team. I think I led the team almost every year in sack bunts. So that helped the batting average a little bit too.
Let's play a fun little game. It won't take a minute because we have a limited amount of time we're able to do this. But would you like to guess how many home runs you did have your senior year? I'm not even looking to the stats. I memorized this.
I believe you memorized it.
How many homers did you have your senior year?
Eight.
Wow, right on the nose. Right
Eight.
on the nose. You had eight your senior year, four sophomore, two junior, none as a freshman. But yeah, I can't believe you got that. That's impressive.
I had a walk-off homer against Kentucky at home. Joe Blanton was sitting in the bullpen. He was the only guy not, Joe was a freshman at the time. I kid with Joe years later. I was like, hey man, I said,
Wow.
I'm glad I didn't bring you in. But yeah, off their closer, first pitch fastball
That's
in
so
11
cool.
innings against UK at home. That was one of our midweek rivals. That was a fun one.
Wow. One more question to tie together this whole college segment before we move on to beyond the college level. Would you say that that freshman year was where your good batting mentality began, or would you say that started as a later thing? For those of you who don't know, that's the motto that you live by on your website, on all your social medias. Hashtag good batting is everything. Was that freshman year where that mentality started?
Great question, and no. Simple answer,
Oh.
no. It started later because freshman year I was really thrashing around in the deep end. I was barely keeping my head above water. I was not, there was no approach, there was no philosophy, there was no, I didn't know what I was doing, Jack. I was trying to survive. It came much later when I was more mature, in pro ball and in coaching, and I understood hitting more, and I just understood life more. I had many more experiences of failure and success and just literally being around the world. And so that came much later.
Interesting. I was thinking that that may have, like, been a thought that popped in your head as soon as you were talking with the whoever you mentioned. The
Terry, yeah.
yeah, that mentality. I thought it just may have popped, but that's actually interesting to know that it came actually later.
Yeah, and I think that's a lesson for all of us is like, and again, for me, I wanted results right away. I wanted to, I tell guys, coaches that I mentor now, for example, I've been doing this for 20 plus years. They want to do what I do now. I'm like, yeah, I'm a 20-year overnight success, man. Like 20 years ago when I was starting that freshman year where I was trying to thrash around in the deep end and just survive, that's what it feels like your first year or first couple years.
Yeah.
You can't look ahead and be like, oh man, this dude's really polished as a 20-year veteran or a 10-year veteran or I have 300 podcast episodes. Like you look back all the way to the first one. I remember in KWB Radio, our podcast, Charlie Manuel, my buddy was on the first one. And I cringe at listening to that because of how, not because of Chuck, he was awesome as always, but because how Joe and I went about it. It was our very first one. Didn't know what to do. But by the time we were done with it, 6 years later, it was like riding a bike. We didn't even plan for the podcast. We just showed up, plugged things in, no research, and we just went and it was spotless. But 6 years later was much different than day one.
I love that. I love, the constant improvement and looking back and being like, wow, look at where I came from. I think that's huge when it comes to everything in life, not just sports, not just academics, every single aspect of life, I think it can be applied to.
Yeah, and to simply put, it's playing the long game, really. It's playing the long game. And again, you look at that freshman year to my last year, there were a ton of improvements. But I couldn't get it all done in the first year. That's unfair expectations on myself or anybody else. And, I think that's really the life lesson to be pulled out of that is I survived that. It's learning how to struggle well in life. And in baseball or whatever you're doing. And people like, I don't want to struggle, or I am struggling. We all struggle. We're a hot mess express. Every one of us, if we really truly be vulnerable with each other, we all have things going on. Like no one's perfect. So if we learn how to struggle well through life, we're going to be okay. We see the struggle, we make adjustments, we keep going on. And that's kind of, going back to the college years, I learned how to struggle well. I didn't know what I was doing at the time, even by the end of it. But again, the 20 plus years down the road, I just learned how to struggle well.
It's just such a great message being able to hear, for someone who's, been working in baseball for years and years and years, talk about this success. Now you're passing it on to your son and the rest of, the Ghost team and all these professional athletes. We'll touch more on that in a minute. But how about we get over to your, KW baseball, get over to the good batting mentality. Of course, you made a book, which I believe you gave me a signed copy of, and I think I know exactly where it is. I'm not going to go get it, but I think I know where it is. And I, it has 75% 5-star reviews on Amazon, and it's a good book. I think it's 50 something pages, but it goes really in depth. I read it as soon as you gave it to me. I was like, wow, this is some good stuff.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, it was a book that I knew that guys would be able to read over and over again. It's not, like you said, it's a not very big book. There's ample room in the margins to take notes. It's been in every clubhouse, college clubhouses, high schools. It really was a book that I wrote to kind of fill in the gaps of there's a lot of swing stuff out there. There's a lot of, there's just a bunch of information out there. But what I wrote that book was is, hey, listen, I can't teach you anything, but I can make you think in order to learn. So that book is geared towards making you think about your processes, your systems, your approach, like what are you doing or what are you not doing, and allow you to come to conclusions rather than me tell you this is how you should do it. For example, there's a chapter in the book called, What's Your View from the Batter's Box? And most players will have a view from the batter's box facing the pitcher. Well, what I take them through is, what if we go out to shortstop and second base and turn around and look at home plate, see how far that is. And then we go all the way out to center field, your power field. That's our North Star. That's what, if we're on time, the ball goes to center. Why is center field the furthest part of the field on any field you go to? It's because that's your power field. Walk them all the way out, turn them back around and say, this is pretty far. Right? And sharing with them a different view of what they already have been doing. But you provide perspective, a different lens to look through. And then hopefully that allows them to kind of just think about a little bit more of why they do what they do.
Yeah, and that's when it comes down to, your whole philosophy, the whole KW baseball thing, getting pro athletes, minor league athletes, high school ball players, college ball players, just getting ready to see the baseball game from all different angles and be really able to advance their hitting in as much as you can.
Yeah, I look at it as more of a mentorship than a coach. I'm not your
Oh.
swing coach. I'm not your hitting coach. I'm more of a mentor, someone who can walk alongside you, listen, be a world-class listener, because a lot of guys just need to talk to somebody without a fear of whatever it is that they're fearing that will come back to them. My job exists really because I don't make the lineup card. I don't work for a team. I work
Oh,
for an
yeah.
individual. So you can share with me stuff. You can be very vulnerable with me, and it's not going to affect your playing time. You can come to me and saying like you're scared or stressed or this is going on, and we can have a conversation about it. Or I just sit there and I listen to you and let you vent, and you're like, thanks, appreciate it. And then they go on, and there's a lot to be gained from that. So for me, it really is just being more of a mentor. Meet the player where they're at and then walk them from there. If you stand on top of your head, Jack, and you hit line drives, you're going to have to teach me how you do it because I've never seen it, but it obviously works for you. And we're going to roll with that. And who am I to say, like, you can't hit like that when obviously you do really well?
I wouldn't say it worked for me. I played 1 year of ball at Ghost, JV ball, sophomore year, 0 for 5 at the dish. It was not a pretty year.
Well, I'll give you this little tidbit. Go back to my freshman year of high school. I got DH for on varsity. I didn't
Wow.
even get a bat. My son had more hits last year than I ever had my freshman year.
Wow. I mean, that's something. That's a flex for him.
My point is that, it's not about the hits, right? It's about the growth, the experience. That experience for you, Jack, I would imagine you've already taken some lessons from that, and you'll continue to pull from that as you get older. It's a chapter in that book that you're writing right now with your life, which is really cool, because I tell guys too, sometimes we can get caught up in this rat race, no matter what we're doing. We're talking about baseball right now. There is a very small percentage of guys who play high school baseball, sports in general. We're just talking baseball right now. There's an even fewer percentage, as you well know, that get to go off and play college baseball, no matter what the division or level. And there's even fewer people that get to play professionally, no matter what level. So you are in a kind of a small percentage class by yourself, even if when you graduate this spring and you only have JV stats to go by, you are still in a small percentage of guys.
I'm just happy I got a Max Preps page. That's all I care about.
You and my son
Oh,
checking it
yeah.
all the time.
We got a few minutes left here. I got a couple more topics I want to touch on. When it comes back to that coach versus mentor thing you touched on, how did your experience being the hitting coach of Team USA 18U in 2013? Was that more of a coaching? Was that still more of a mentorship? Or did you try to find a different way to combine the both to end up getting gold?
I think it was a little bit of both. First off, the best experience by far of my baseball career. Nothing will ever top that. Wearing USA across your chest in a foreign country and be able to have a gold medal and celebrate with 20 plus other brothers is awesome. I have a gold medal only because of the 20 kids. They did all the work. I just made sure they got all on the bus on time. But in terms of the coaching and the mentoring, I'll paint a picture to we had TOS, which in the summer, Tournament of Stars for USA Baseball, 140 kids came. 5 days later, we cut from 140 to 40. 5 days later, we went from 40 to 20 and took those kids over in that year to Taishan, Taiwan. So just an hour and a half south of Taipei, Taiwan. And you only have about 5 other days to kind of get acclimated with those kids and put systems in place and get them ready to compete in the World Cup. So if you look at it, we pretty much had a month to pick the team and to get them ready to be able to play for another 8 to 10 days down in Taishan. So it was a little bit of when we took the flight over, it was about 18-hour flight to Taipei. I had to get to know the kids. I didn't really know them personally. I just knew of them as much as I could. So the hitters of the 20 kids, we had 15 position players. We had 5 POs.
Whoa.
So, and then, a lot of those position players are two-way guys too, so we
Oh,
could
yeah.
use them or whatever. But so 15 hitters I had to get to know on an 18-hour flight. And so they would sit next to me. I'd ask them questions and about their personalities, what they like to do. It was a crash course in getting to know you.
Oh, yeah.
So that when we got in there and got into the country and got onto the field and had 5 days of practice and some scrimmage games, I was able to start implementing some offensive stuff. And we didn't, again, this is Team USA, best talented kids, in the country. Not all are playing the positions that they would play in the future, rather. Jack Flaherty, for instance, really never pitched for us. He played third base. So, and the rest is history. Jay Flair's still on the mound doing his
Oh, yeah.
thing, but he was on that team. But getting to know Jay Flair and getting to know some other guys, I had to do that really, really quick. So it was a little bit of coach and mentor, dad figure. A lot of those kids had never been out of the country before. This was all brand new to them. So you're, again, imagine you going, your class, they were seniors. Imagine
Yeah.
them going, you going to a foreign country and having to compete on foreign soil. So
Especially
that's
with
kind of how
USA on your chest, that adds so much.
it was the first time they ever played a meaningful game. Like, not to take away state championships. I think Jay Flair won a state title at Dodger Stadium that year, that spring, as a junior. But again, USA, you're playing for an entire country, not just your high school. And you're surrounded. I mean, we had Moncada was playing for Cuba, Arozarena was playing for Cuba. I mean, you're talking about you're not playing against, what at Malvern Prep. No disrespect,
Yeah.
good team in the Philadelphia area. and nationally known.
But
I
they're
think
no
there's Cuba.
Japan.
No, Japan, who we beat. And the pitcher for Japan, left-hander. If you've ever read the book The Arm by Jeff Passan, I don't know
Oh,
if you ever
yeah.
read that
Yeah,
book.
totally.
They talk about our World Cup. If you leaf through that again, the Japanese pitcher they talked about threw 188 pitches on Friday, came back on Sunday, threw 88 against us. Threw on Friday 188 against us, and then on Sunday 80.
That's unfair.
It's in that book. But my point is that very, very good competition.
Yeah. Shout out Adam Haseley. Shout out that entire team.
It was crazy. If you go on YouTube, which you may have seen the highlights from that, I think USA still has the highlights. Hayes makes a catch up over those high fences that they have over there along the foul lines. That's the highest I've ever seen a kid jump, and he got it. And just incredible stuff.
All right. Got like 1 or 2 minutes left here. I have one final question to ask you, and it is about your pickleball endeavors, PBX Pickleball, which is a little thing where you can play pickleball with some pro athletes, a lot of pro ball players, Matt Holliday, Tino Martinez, Youkilis, as you said earlier, Eric Gagne. Where did that interest come from, and how did you get this to the level it's at right now?
Well, it's certainly not just me. We have a lot of great people that have helped to build this up, start this up. So I'm a very small part of something really, really cool. And it really stemmed out of the fact that what do former professional athletes miss the most? They miss the camaraderie and they miss the competition. And then slide in, what's the easiest game to pick up and play right away? Pickleball. So we combine the two. What are the athletes missing? And then what are the fans like as well? And what are they missing? Interacting with their favorite athletes. So we
Wow.
combine the two. You get to play with and against and have a little food and beverage after. Just really like it, almost like you're in the clubhouse, almost like you're standing on the turtle for BP. And then, you get in there, take a swing, and this. Crack jokes and tell stories and have a really intimate experience. So that's why we started it.
Love it. That's going to be all the time we got here for today's episode. Thank you so much, Mr. Wilson, for hopping on. It's an absolute honor to get you on for the podcast. Hopefully, we can do another one sometime in the future.
Absolutely, Jack. Thanks so much for having me, man. It was a blast.
Of course, Yankees game should be on now. I'm going to go get that on. Thank you so much again, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Playoff Push podcast. Next week, Tuesday, NFL recap, Wednesday, main episode. We will see you then. Have a great rest of your day.